Welcome to Insights on Social Connections. I'm Jim Feeney, the host of Insights on Social Connections here on CJNU 93.7 FM. Now, the program airs once a month at noon on the last Wednesday of the month, and it's part of the ongoing Insights on Aging partnership programming by CJNU with the Manitoba Association of Senior Communities, the MASC, and this particular program, Insights on Social Connections, also involves active aging in Manitoba. And what the show is all about, it's about new programs that are being set up to help keep older Manitobans, those of us who are members of that 55-plus demographic, active and connected to the world around us. Earlier episodes of Insights and Social Connections, on those earlier shows, we learned that the program is also called Social Prescriptions, and that's because Manitoba's medical community is very much involved with this as well. Now, and that's because doctors who treat older Manitobans are often dealing with people who are losing or sometimes lost touch with the world around them as they age, and especially as they lose their life partners. Sometimes a medical prescription can help, but what kind of prescription? Does it have to be some kind of a drug to help deal with something like depression? Well, maybe not necessarily. Reconnecting with the community is often part of the solution. But how to make that actually work? And we're very lucky that one of the co-hosts of this program is Connie Newman, who's with us today. And Connie is somebody who's been basically helping to lead the charge to get this program up and going in Manitoba, across Manitoba, and actually beyond. So, Connie, could you tell us a little bit about how this works with the medical community and how organizations such as yours work with the medical community to get this concept of connecting and prescribing joined together?
Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, it's Connie Newman, and yes, we're doing everything we can to connect the dots between family physicians, nurse practitioners, and we older adults. In that connection, most communities in Manitoba have senior resource coordinators, and they're the, what I would call the community wellness leads. We're hoping and we're gaining ground to connect family physicians to senior resource coordinators. And today we've got some real good activity happening in Transcona, starting in Fort Garry in the city of Winnipeg, St. James Assiniboine. We've got happenings. And we also have happenings in Interlake Eastern, coming out of Selkirk, and the group that's there. So listen in, ask in your community, and if you don't know who your senior resource coordinator is, call 211 and ask. State that you live in St. James, who is my senior resource coordinator. They will help you.
Because one of the things that senior resource coordinators are trained to do is to work with the medical community. Because one of the new concepts here is that medical doctors can now prescribe this connection to those social resource coordinators to help older adults find ways to interact with communities.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And that's the movement. It's a worldwide movement. We're doing what we can in Manitoba. In the other Canadian provinces, when you think about what Alberta, BC, Ontario, they're establishing connectors, mentors. There's a variety of names out there. The bottom line is to connect the medical community to community wellness, and across Canada, and the World Health Organization is also leading the charge, if you want, on social prescribing. We Manitoba are on the map, and we're doing our best to stay on the map.
Well, and one of the things that is very interesting about this program is that it calls on resources from across the medical but also the university field so that we can get as much actual research to back this up as possible. And Connie, you and I are very fortunate today to have one of Canada's leading experts on healthy aging joining us on today's show. Dr. Verena Menek is Professor Emerita at the Max Rady College of Medicine at the University of Manitoba. Recently retired, but that doesn't seem to be slowing you down, Dr. Menek, Verena, very much. You've spent your career working with and on behalf of older Manitobans, and the University of Manitoba says that one of your key strengths is your community-based research approach. That involves partnering with community organizations to address the health and well-being of older adults, and the university adds that Dr. Menek is a recognized leader in the field of aging research. Now, today we're going to be, so we're really glad to have you on the show, and we're looking forward to hearing your opinions and your insights and hearing about some of the research and some of the findings.
Well, hi, thanks for having me.
Very good. We're talking today about the Social Prescriptions, Social Connections Program, and that whole concept that Connie and I were just talking about of tying together the community organizations that work with older Manitobans and tying them together with the medical community that also works with older Manitobans because of the joint interest that they share. Your whole concept really tied in with that whole background in the field of aging and gerontology and your interest in partnering with community organizations. So in many ways, the work that you've done could be one of the things that led to this kind of partnership and this kind of thinking in this field?
Well, yes, maybe, if you want to put it that way in some ways. But also to put in the social connection. So I've been interested in social connection, social participation for a long time. My background is actually social psychology, so that puts social right into it, and the idea that we are social animals, we need social connections, we do not do well when we do not have social connections, and so social prescribing fits into this perfectly because it tries to make that connection from the medical field, which is really not in the business of the social aspect of people's lives, you know, that they're medically focused and they need to be medically focused. But people have social needs, and how do they get into those services, programs, community resources? That's through the social prescribing. So it's a perfect fit. I love the idea.
Yeah. One of the things that that interests me about it is that the whole idea of the prescription coming from the doctor, does that help legitimize it in some ways in the minds of some of the patients who may be exposed to it?
Well, I would think so, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a certain clout if your physician says, you know, why don't we refer you over? I mean, it's like any specialist, right? I mean, a specialist referral. I mean, the physician says, well, you know, I think you should see that specialist. We don't really question that. We think that's a great idea. So in this case, we refer over. The physician can refer the primary care provider, I should say. It's broader than just physicians. Refers over to a senior resource coordinator who is the expert in community resources. So it makes that link to the expert in that social field. So it's a no-brainer. It makes a lot of sense.
Connie, is the social resources coordinator, I mean, they've been part of the community centers for many, many years, but do they require special training in order to be able to fully use this program that's being set up now?
I would say, Jim, the short answer is no, because they've been doing it for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
We are supporting ongoing training with them through this initiative. It's most important that Dr. Michael Rutledge, who is a trained family physician, has told us many times, and even when he was on the show with us a while back, that social prescription is a tool for a family physician who didn't have up to this point a place to refer a patient to help in the community. Now family physicians do. And I think that's the big lead for this, because up to this point, the doctor, the family physician, only had medical prescriptions to refer to. Now they have community prescription to refer to.
And that adds a whole new not concept, but a whole new set of windows, doesn't it, to things that they can do?
Absolutely. And I know that family physicians, some of them listened to the 2-on-1 presentation recently, and they didn't know, but now many of them know the value of 2-on-1 in this province, in this country, because there's somebody at the end of the line that will refer an older adult to a phone number or a place to get socially connected.
And that's the 2-on-1 number, phone number that can be used to access these. Dr. Monick, I wonder if we could take a step back in this, though. You mentioned that that this is a very significant health concern, isolation. What are some of the factors that can lead to an adult becoming isolated as they age?
Yeah, there are a number of factors. My group and my team, we've used the acronym HELPS to kind of summarize all those risk factors. So the H would be health problems. Sometimes a person has mobility problems, they can't get out, they can't go out and about, so their social networks or the people they interact with narrows. There can be environmental factors. For example, if somebody lives in an unsafe neighborhood, they may just feel afraid to go out. And sometimes people age in those neighborhoods, and it just, they don't know the neighbors anymore, and they become isolated. There's a big category is life transition, life events. As we know, a lot of older people lose family, spouses die, friends die, siblings die, and so they're the people that they can interact with, have interacted with over a lifetime, becomes just, it shrinks, the network shrinks. So, but also life transition could be losing a driver's license, and we know that's really challenging for a lot of men. Jim, you might be relating to this, right? The men listening to this, you might relate to that because now you lose your freedom. You lose the ability to go out and about, and so that can be isolating, and then making those new friendships can be difficult. So there's a lot of different factors to come into play. Often there are multiple factors, so somebody might become widowed and have mobility problems, not have a driver's license, so if you think about a spouse who might have been driving, so it combines into then having somebody become socially isolated, and that in and of itself becomes almost reinforcing. The more isolated that person is, they may lose even more friends that they visit and lose connections.
Do we sometimes even fail to realize that we are growing more isolated, or do we just accept it as sort of a natural occurrence of getting older?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I mean, interestingly, when you look at loneliness, so loneliness is different from social isolation in that it's a feeling. It's a feeling of being disconnected. When you look at the research, the very oldest people are actually less likely to be lonely, feel lonely, than younger people. And I'm wondering if that ties into kind of getting used to being more alone and a feeling of maybe also perhaps a little more resilient to being alone. So I don't know.
It's kind of a double-edged thing in a way, isn't it? It could be, I mean, in some ways, feeling lonely helps you develop ways to cope with it, perhaps, rather than just accepting it as, or getting sad or depressed about it.
It could be. However, having said that, being lonely and being chronically lonely is not good. We all can feel lonely once in a while. I know sometimes, it's a Sunday, I kind of feel not so good, I would like to see somebody. That's different from being chronically all the time lonely, and that is not good. It's bad for physical health, it's bad for mental health, it's reinforcing, it creates a downward spiral, and it can even lead to premature mortality. So it's not a good thing.
If one realizes that, hey, maybe I am getting a little bit out of touch with what's going on and with the people around me, are there steps that we can take to deal with that, to try to overcome some of the bad effects that may follow?
Well, I would always say reach out. And it's a two-way thing, though. The person needs to reach out and find resources, but people who are profoundly lonely and isolated often have a great deal of difficulty to do that. Mm-hmm. So the reaching out gets us into the community and saying the community needs to reach out to that person. And this is where social prescribing is incredibly powerful, because the person that the physician may see, the family physician may see, will possibly not be in a position to reach out themselves. So it's the physician can then make that connection. So then the senior resource coordinator, again, being that expert in what's available in the community, can reach out to the person and can then make a connection.
And that makes a difference.
Yes, absolutely.
Connie, you wanted to add something to that?
We all need to remember that our health affects our social connection affects our health. It's a determinant of health. And as we're sitting, and I find now, yes, I'm busy, et cetera, but there are some evenings I think, who can I reach out to? Who can I phone? And I am very well connected, and there's always somebody that comes to mind. As a neighbor, I look around and think, I need to say hi to more people living near me, because it's part of that social connection. And the other piece is, in Winnipeg, in Manitoba, we, MASC, knows of over 30 groups, senior centers, active living centers in community, some of them in churches, some of them in community centers, that would love to have somebody come through the door. And if you need help getting through that door, phone the center, say, I'd like to come and visit. Somebody will meet you at the door, like the senior resource coordinator finder, so that there's a comfort zone to those that don't know how to get in the door or scared of what they're going to find, etc. That's part of social prescription. That's part of what our senior resource finders do.
And we've had a couple of the senior resource coordinators on the show, and their energy and the level of connection to the different organizations and the different activities is really phenomenal. I mean, it's not just playing cards and canasta. I mean, there's a whole range of activities that can be accessed through the senior resource coordinators, but through the centers themselves, just by, as you said, picking up the phone and then walking in the door.
Absolutely, and we're doing our best through CJNU and some of our Insights on Aging, through Senior Scope, which a local paper you can find in many, many places across the city, Lifestyles 55 Plus, to advertise our member centers so you know where to go. And I know that most of them, and I'm going to say it again, call 211, pick up the phone. Somebody will answer the phone there and tell you where your local gathering of older adults is. And you never know what you'll find there.
Even if the person that answers that phone, well, first off, is the phone always answered?
24 hours a day, seven days a week. I'm not sure about Christmas. and I think the other piece of that, when you dial 211, their longest wait time is 43 seconds. So they have got a system across Manitoba and across Canada that is pretty powerful for those sitting at home and want to talk to somebody.
So even if that phone is answered, it doesn't have to be in Manitoba. Whoever answers it from wherever in Canada is going to know what's available in Manitoba.
All you have to do is say, I'm from Stonewall, and what's available from Senior Services. They will give you a phone number to call.
Verena, we were just talking, Connie's been talking about the value of friendship, and you mentioned that as well. The research that you've done and that your group has done, have you looked at that question of friends and how important they are to our mental, but to our physical health as well?
Yes, we have. We have looked at how a person's social network, we refer to it as the social network. That's the people that the person quite frequently interacts with, is meeting, and the social network consists of, importantly, certainly a family, close family, siblings, but there's also friends. And what we found is, in terms of what roles they play, people in our social network play different roles. A friend might play, in a sense, the role of a confidant, like somebody who gives you emotional support. And Connie mentioned, you know, who can I call? Maybe the who can I call is actually to talk about a problem. So that might be a close friend, it might be a sibling. But friends might also might be for having fun. Right? They're the people that we might meet once a week. I curl once a week in the winter, and we just sit around after and we laugh, right? It's for fun. These are not people that I, or maybe they, want to share really intimate things with, but it's a different role. And so friends can play different roles. They might play the role of somebody as an emotional support, but might also, just in quotation marks here, be for fun, having a laugh. So friends play an important role. I will also like to add there, even those people in the so-called peripheral network, you know, the people that we meet once in a while, they also play important roles. I have a dog. I walk my dog. And when you walk your dog, you meet other people who walk their dogs, right? And what do you talk about? You talk about your dog because that's what you love to do. How old is your dog? What, you know? And that, too, can play an important role, but it's not the only thing. So a social network ideally would have different people who serve different roles, right from that emotional, the confidant. You can really share important things with that person, to having somebody who could ideally help you if you're sick. So there you are, sick in bed. Who is going to come and bring you some groceries? To somebody you can laugh with, to somebody to just chat about the weather and your dog or cat. I'm also a cat person, so I can do cats too. So,
Gardening too,
exactly, mm-hmm. You know. And we share our misery over too much zucchini and so.
Right. Did you say cucumbers? No, they're done. They're done, so we're okay. You know, often I start this show with the song that, if I can figure this button out, that I play, but I think with the conversation we've had, I think this song, if I get the right button, is something that's very apropos and very appropriate for the discussion we've just had.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do I do when my love is away? Thank you.
And welcome back to Insights on Social Connections. And I apologize to our listeners for that difficulty that I had figuring out which button to push on this computer screen. But we're back on topic again with people who do know what they're talking about and know what they're doing, Connie and Verena. Verena, we were talking about friendship before, and just before I finally found a way to play that song, which was very appropriate. All of us in this room have gone through the process of retirement. Some of us are still working on it, especially Connie. It's a transition. And many of our social connections are built around our work lives, like throughout our careers. What does research show? How do people deal with that, with losing that job-based social connectivity as they get older?
Yeah. Retirement is another one of those important life transitions, and the answer to how it affects people is really it depends. There are people whose only social connections are work connections. So when that ends, then the tricky part becomes how do they reconnect with other groups and what can they do? And that, again, how you deal with that depends. It depends on the person. There's some people who make very good connections very quickly. They might start to volunteer instead and almost replace those work connections with the volunteer connections. Other people may not know how to do it. So as always, people are complex. People are diverse. There are diverse factors at play. Retirement, just in terms of the health aspect, that's been studied a lot. Does it improve health? Does it make a difference in terms of deteriorating health? And again, it depends. People who voluntarily retire tend to do well health-wise. People who are forced to retire don't. And I wonder if that ties into the social connections. People who are forced to retire, so they're laid off perhaps, there might be mandatory retirement. They have not planned for retirement. They maybe their connections are all through work and they haven't started to build a network outside of that, and then it really hits them hard. And of course financially too. There's a whole financial issue at play as well. So it's, as always, people are complicated, which makes people so fascinating.
Connie, you have some thoughts on this?
Oh, absolutely. People often talk to me about when am I going to retire? I don't know that I'll ever retire from community connection. When I was in the school system, building skate parks and helping youth stay in community and be successful within the community was a high priority. To me today, the value in community connection, whatever that looks like, is an important goal of mine. And am I having fun most days doing what I'm doing? Absolutely. We often talk about, I get up every day and it's not that I'm going to work. I'm going to community to do what we do in community. I've got lots of social connections that I need to remember every now and then, that when I'm sit there at evening, when's the last time I've talked to my girlfriends that I've known for now 70 years because we all went to school together. Wow. And that still happens today. Mm-hmm. But you have to stop and think. I need to stop and think, who am I connected with? Who should I be calling? And I need to do that to stay socially connected.
Is one of the advantages of being retired is that one can choose the level of connection that you can get involved with?
Absolutely. In my mind, it is. Sometimes our body says we can't do as much as we used to. That's fair game. But we know it's a determinant of health to stay connected, to socially participate, and it's individual for everybody. At any time in their life, I think about teenagers in the school system that I used to, and still do in some cases. If they were not socially connected, they were not healthy. And we could see it as teachers.
Can we talk a bit about then about social, about the kind of health then? Physical health, mental health, are both at play here?
I'd say yes.
Yeah.
I would, because if we're not, our mental health, I know several older adults who their mental health is, in my mind, and I'm not a professional in this area, are directly connected to their lack of social connection. And it's very difficult for them to walk in the door of some place by themselves. And it was like that with teenagers, brand new school, when they turned 13 or went from grade 8 to 9 in a different building. It's all the same, and it's very, very important from social connection.
So this isn't exclusively about older adults, then?
Not in my mind.
Dr. Venkman, what do you say? You're nodding your head through this as well.
There's social isolation and loneliness are both connected to physical health and mental health. And they're complex relationships. So in terms of physical health, we've known for decades. This is not new research. This is very long-standing research, a lot of research that shows that there are major physical health consequences from being socially isolated or lonely, like having heart disease, stroke, even dementia, and mental health in terms of depression is a big one, very strongly related to loneliness. But the pathways are really complicated. It's not just one leading to the other very simply. So there's people who are socially isolated, lonely, they may be less active. So we know physical activity is important to health. So the less activity relates then to physical and mental health problems. We have poor nutrition. You know, it's not fun eating alone. Mm-hmm. It's not fun cooking for yourself. So that ties into it, and that then contributes to poor health. There's physiological issues of hypertension, immune system responses, and that all combines together to lead to poor mental and physical health, which ultimately then also leads to increased likelihood of dying sooner. So when you look at the research, and we have known this for a very long time, that social isolation and loneliness are as much as a risk factor for dying earlier prematurely as lack of physical activity, poor nutrition, as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. We hear that a lot. So we've known it for a long time. Mm-hmm. We do not need more research to tell us that social isolation and loneliness are a problem. We don't need that research. We don't need more reports on it. What we do need are solutions. And that gets us back to social prescribing is one solution.
Are there others that are emerging as well?
Are there solutions?
Yes.
Well, in terms of, it's once again, it's a complex issue, right? Social prescribing makes a link between the medical system and community resources. But there are other players out there. There's other ways of contacting people, getting people out. It's getting on CJNU and saying, what are the services available, is one approach. Raising awareness is one approach. So there's different people have different needs. So I would say there will be three groups of people. One group simply needs to know what's available, because people may not know. So raising awareness is a good thing.
Huge.
That's a huge thing. Other people may need to be referred to those community resources like senior centers, senior groups, church groups, what have you. And then there's a group that needs specialized services, because they have additional needs. They have profound needs. They may be those profoundly socially isolated people. They truly have nobody. But on top of that, they may have social anxiety. So they will not reach out. They will not walk into a senior center. And they need the specialized services, which may be individual counseling, which may be somebody who actually visits them. So they're the special group. And how do you reach them? That may not be through giving them a prescription to community services per se, but prescription, in a sense, if you will, prescription, the term to a specialized program like counseling, one-on-one counseling.
Connie, you wanted to add to that?
What am I going to call it? Digital access. Over the last 3, 4, 5 years, and COVID really woke many of us up to the value of Zoom or Teams or video chats, etc. And I've seen an upsurge through senior centers, especially of older adults wanting support to get online. And this allows for some people, and especially I was on a meeting this morning, when it's 40 below and you can't get out, we've got programs like Senior Center Without Walls, which is a phone-in program. We've got many of our centers are running programs via Zoom, especially during winter months. So there's other ways of being socially connected. It takes the individual to make the call, to make the connection, because we're all out there to work together in the community as best we can.
Let's say I've got a family member who known me all my life, somebody who has been very important. We've all had people like that, hopefully, in our lives. And we see that as they've gotten older, they're starting to pull back a little bit. What behaviors can I recognize, and what can I do to help that person?
I would say take them out for lunch, step one. Step two, call the local easy access community group, senior center. Let them know you're coming for a tour with your friend, because the friend will not go alone, probably. And that's a start, because at most gatherings of older adults, there's at least one staff person or a volunteer that will help make that on-site connection. And to me, it's a place to start.
Mm-hmm. I would add to that it's, sometimes people have a lot of negative thoughts, like,
yes.
Well, I'm not a senior. I am not going to go to that senior center, which is for all people. Now, which, fair enough, but have they looked at all the services that are available? So I live out in Charleswood. I've looked at the website for the Charleswood Active Living Center. It's not Senior Center. It's Active Living Center, just to note. It's amazing what they have. Amazing. So you like to play pickleball. Well, there's pickleball for you. So it's not just one thing. It's not and what I would say is try it. Try different things. If it's not for you, that's okay. Try something else. If that doesn't work, that's okay. But you as a friend, suggest those things and, go along. I think that would help. And maybe volunteering is the answer, because some of us prefer to just do something rather than participate in something. And there are a lot of volunteer opportunities.
Yes.
Again, maybe 2 out of 3 won't work out, but the third one is something that the person likes. So not to be afraid of trying different things and checking it out and getting that right fit. And let me just add one other thing when we talk about social connections, it does not mean we all have to be constantly all the time connected to a lot of people. We're not all social butterflies. Some of us can't always be in groups. I'm one of those. So a senior active living center and the group activities might not be for that person, but there may be a photography club that has a few people in it, and that might be for that person, right? There's something for everybody, and there's no one size fits all. And trying out different things that fit different needs is really, really important.
And Connie, I know that's been something that you've been a very vocal advocate for. A senior center should not be a senior center. It should be an active living center.
I'm going to add on to that right now. The World Health Organization says the average age in Canada is life expect 81 years. And at the halfway point, 42 years, you're a senior. So don't get hung up on the fact that you're a senior. You are. You're in the second half of your life. Anyway, that's personal. And
mm-hmm.
I think most important, what I've seen happen in a lot of places, and I can think of St. James, and I know out in Good Neighbors as well, there's a place to just sit and have a cup of coffee. You don't have to get into the group. I was in St. James one a couple weeks ago. They got two puzzle tables going on there, and you can just be around people, say hi, and go do a puzzle. You don't need to get into that group type of, because to me, I don't do that. I haven't got enough time to sit in groups other than to have coffee and conversation. I do like that.
Yeah. I'm looking at my music board again. I think I've figured it out. So I'm going to try this one. Bill Withers has a song that is very well known called Lean on Me. And that really what this is all about, about family members or friends engaging with one another when they see an opportunity that something that good can be the result of getting involved. So maybe this song sort of ties in with all of that.
You can't carry on.
And that was Bill Withers with Lean On Me. Verena, you mentioned earlier that there's been considerable research over the decades into this whole issue of social isolation, and it is something that has been ongoing. But one thing I wanted to put out to both of you about this whole issue of looking into the past then is the problem and the problems associated with the lack of social connections, have those problems shifted or evolved over the years? Has it always been part of our society, or is it something that is becoming worse? I wonder, Connie, if you want to start with that.
Oh, sure. To me, when I look back over my mom and dad, who have since passed, had 5 or 6 siblings. We lived down the street. My brother and I grew up down the street, same street as my grandmother did. So the family unit was there. Today, that same family unit, we've got extended families, we've got blended families, we've got some on the blended families, and the extended families are not talking to each other. In the demographics, I've got 2 people that I connect with that are no longer living in Canada. One family is living in Germany. Their dad is in Winnipeg. The other family spent a lot of time over in Ireland. They've now moved back because of the family connection. And I look at, I'm a single parent. My daughter is 50 years old, and it's just she and I. So when you look at the demographics today, there are many people who have no children, have no grandchildren, or their children or grandchildren are living not in the local community. It's very easy to travel today. Very easy to travel, and our children are living in other countries because that's what they want to do. So when we look at family supports, we retire. There may be a life event. Many families have had life events, and the connections from the family are not there anymore. I see many, many older people who don't know who to connect with because there is no immediate family. So right there, you got the social isolation happening. And what happens with them?
Verena, has the research showing many of the same trends?
Well, in terms of families, the families have changed. There's no doubt. We have smaller families. We have fewer grandchildren. You know, it used to be there were a lot of grandchildren and few grandparents, and now it's the reverse,
yeah,
right? And then family members don't live here. That's definitely changed. But when you look at the research on social isolation, the number of people, the proportion, the prevalence of people who are socially isolated or lonely hasn't really changed that much over time. And I think that's because we live differently too, that friends, they have become more important. Mm-hmm. And we connect to family in different ways. It used to be personal contact. Now we stay in contact in other ways. So, yeah. You know, my sister lives in Spain, but we FaceTime all the time. So I actually have a stronger connection, even though we're far apart, than we used to have, you know, in the past. So as always, it's more complicated than that. And of course, there are those people who don't have that social network. So again, it's a social network. When I say social network, it doesn't really matter who is in your social network. It can be family, but friends are important, or neighbors, yes, are important, what have you, acquaintances are important. So I think there's been that shift in our friendship circles and who becomes important. The people that are falling through the cracks in many ways still and need to be connected are those without the family and those without the friends and those who have lost friends and families and need to reconnect. And once again, getting back to the topic of this session, social prescribing, this is where that link between the medical field, the physicians saying, you know, noticing there's something wrong and getting them out to that senior resource coordinator who can connect that person to the community resources. That is so very important.
And as you've said, the who is important, but it can be a who can be a wide range of people that you can interact with. And as both of you have said as well, there are many more how to connect, many more hows than what there used to be. And
exactly.
That can be, so it really falls on using, it's the connection. It's not the who or the how. It's the reaching out and making those connections and keeping them up over time, is it not?
Mm-hmm. I would say that keeping them up, I think to my school chums from the 1950s, that I and the rest of us need to reach out and connect. Because there are people out there that you pick up a phone and have a phone conversation. That's part of social connection. Mm-hmm. And it goes back. Everybody's an individual and everybody has to, but we all need to be aware that social connection determines our health. To me, that's the bottom line, because we don't want to be depressed. We got to reach out. If we're depressed, reach out. Do something different.
Mm-hmm. And observe in your circle who is starting to, and Jim, you mentioned, you know,
yes,
you notice something, and what you might notice is the person is starting to look a bit depressed, the person starts to look like they're not eating so well. We see that a lot after somebody becomes widowed, you know, they look a little disheveled, you know, they're starting to, they're clearly not eating well, they're not sleeping. You know, that's the point where the reaching out is truly, is really important, because they may not be in the state of mind to reach out themselves, so it's how can that person be helped to just try something, get out and have that lunch and conversation.
Absolutely, and we need to be aware of those around us, because if you're a bridge group or a cribbage group or a book club group and somebody has just lost a partner and they no longer want to come, you may need to reach out. You may, as an individual in community, say, hey, where's Sally? We haven't seen Sally for a while. Maybe I'm going to call her. We are all in this together.
How do people respond to that sometimes? Is it always welcomed?
I would say no. And sometimes people who are socially isolated might actually say, oh, I'm just fine. No, I don't want any help. I don't need anybody. And I would say, okay, yeah, and as a friend or as a family member, you see that, you know, you might prod and nudge, but you can't force anybody to be connected. There is a risk at being isolated, living alone, socially isolated, if something happens, and is there an emergency contact? I like to say, do you have an emergency contact? If you don't, do you have a lifeline? Because what if you fall? What if you're in a heat wave and your air conditioner has just broken down and you're really, really hot, you can't get out? You know, what if something happens? Do you have a backup? People need to be ready to be connected. You cannot force people, but you can nudge and prod and gently remind and help, you know, help them along.
And I would say in response to that, I've had several no's with one person especially that I connect to. And, you know, every now and then, the four no's, and then I get a yes. Sure, I'll come. So it's that be nice. Don't push too much. The prodding is very good. That's what I do well. And eventually, she comes.
So it can work.
Absolutely.
And to give up that after the first try is not an option.
No, it's not an option. And the other piece of all of this is, again, social isolation. Loneliness comes from many factors. One of them can be health. The person might cancel out on you 9 times out of 10. That's okay. Keep trying, because the person may simply have health problems come up. And from personal experience, I know that it's just, it happens. Don't give up on the person. They may need you, and if not there, they might spiral into something a lot worse, including a depression, and that gets harder and harder to get out of.
Dr. Mendick, I wonder if we could just sort of finish off, and you've mentioned several times about the whole importance of this new program, the Social Connections, Social Prescriptions Program. Your work in many ways kind of led to one of the things that led to this kind of a solution evolving because of all the research that has been done on social isolation and the need to address it and find solutions. So you're pretty positive about this new initiative, are you not? The Social Connections, Social Prescriptions idea?
I'm absolutely excited about having this in Manitoba, in worldwide, being recognized. It makes a whole lot of sense. It's not the solution, but it's one solution. It's an important solution. I think it can work. It's reaching people. We already know with what's been happening in Manitoba, it's reaching people that otherwise would not have been reached by any other means. Because pretty much everybody sees a primary care provider, so a physician, nurse practitioners would have your clinic quite frequently, especially as we age, right? That might be the one contact. Yeah. So it's kind of a no-brainer in a way, right? Why haven't we done this before? But it's great.
So many good ideas are that, are they not? Why didn't we think of this before? Well, I'm afraid that's all the time that we have on today's show. And Dr. Menick, I'd like to thank you so much for being with Connie and me today on today's Insights and Social Connections. Well, I want to thank you for, on behalf of all of us here at CJNU, for all the work that you have done and are doing on behalf of Manitoba seniors, because that's a very important part of our audience and our staff as well. And thank you for the insights that you brought. Connie, as always, it's a pleasure working with you. It's just a lot of fun doing the show with you, and certainly your insights and your continuing work are something that we all appreciate as well.
And I love coming here, so that's good.
Okay. So our next episode of Insights on Social Connections will be at noon on Wednesday, September the 25th. And I hope that you can join us then for that show. I'm Jim Feeney. I'm the host of Insights and Social Connections for CJNU 93.7 FM.